1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. You can send me a question or a comment at brucedumont@museum.tv. You can tweet me a comment at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And as always, you can join us on the internet at beyondthebeltway.com. There are 5 days to go before Inauguration Day. This is the last program tonight of the Obama presidency, so we want to get your reaction. There is just so much to talk about, and I want to begin because we've got three great guests. We have an expert on Russia, so we'll talk a lot about that as the program unfolds. We have a veteran political analyst from the great state of California, and we also have a Republican activist whose job it is to try to breathe life into the Republican Party in California. That's more than a full-time job. But, Mark, I want to start with you. That is, you are the vice chair of the California Republican Party. And, again, it's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
You used to be the chairman of the Los Angeles County the last couple of times you've been on here. Are we in a period where we are going to have a perpetual campaign because so many people in this country don't believe the results of November or don't accept them?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they called President Obama the campaigner-in-chief because he was really in perpetual campaign mode. But I really don't think so. Now that we've got a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president, I think he and the Republicans will try to push their agenda forward to really bring the economy back in this country, shore up our national security. And I don't think it's going to be about continually being in campaign mode. I really think they're going to try to push their agenda.
Sherry, you're a political analyst, long time for NBC4 here.
Yeah.
Mark is talking about the professional politicians. Do you think that you agree with what he just said?
No, I don't. We've been in a perpetual campaign for decades now, I'd say. At least 2 decades ago, Sidney Blumenthal, Clinton apparatchik, whose name may be familiar, wrote actually a very good book called The Permanent Campaign, in which he argued that in today's political environment, you never stop campaigning. And I have to tell you, you run for office, you're a politician. I don't care who you are. This happened to Arnold Schwarzenegger. It will happen to Donald Trump. I mean, I'm sick and tired of the connotation of politician being flat out negative. You run, period. You win. You're not an outsider. You've manipulated the system, and good for you. You won.
But Nigel Rabb, let me follow up with you from Loyola Marymount University, our Russian expert, but you have thoughts on domestic politics as well. This does seem different. On election day, people who are involved in campaigns, you know, they may be down on election night. Maybe a week later they're down. But 2 months later they're not down. I mean, they're not talking about having demonstrations in large cities around the United States. They're not engaging in campaigns to keep people from even appearing as entertainers at the White House. That's never happened before.
As a historian, I would always think, as much as I actually believe that the campaign is ongoing and it will never end, but I think it's important to look at differences. It's like maybe the book you mentioned, Sherry, was written a while ago, but I think we're in a very different mode. Like the very act of sending these tweets is a perpetual campaign.
Well, of course, and it's a new thing.
There's nothing
to compare it with 9.
I think you're going to find things are quite different because now we have a businessman, someone who's used to getting things done. And yes, of course, he's a politician to become the president. But I mean, now that he's there, he's going to continue to act as he acted as the CEO of his corporation.
Still be a politician.
Well, he's going to try to get things done. He's going to demand that his people get things done.
Politicians do try to get things done.
I mean,
that's crazy. Come on, stop spinning.
I'd be very concerned to think that running the country is just like running a business. There's got to be a sensitivity. And I think if we're trying to point to some positives in the president-elect, we have to be able to say, like, it's not just that there's a businessman, because running a country is not like running a business. There's got to be some other aspect.
You know,
and if we run it like a business, there could be serious problems.
It is.
I want to put a fine point on what I'm saying here, is we have hatred. On day one of his administration, we're going to have maybe 50% of this country that hates the President of the United States. That's scary, and I think it's very dangerous.
It is very dangerous. I totally agree. I mean, he hasn't even started doing anything, and you have people protesting in the street and questioning the legitimacy of his election. But again, back to what I was saying, and Nigel, you made the point about a businessman. We Republicans and we, you know, average everyday people have been wanting a businessman for a long time to get in there rather than a politician who's grown up in the conduit of politics.
Ronald Reagan was not a businessman.
And he got things done. And he got things done.
And he was not a businessman.
Not an issue. No, he wasn't a businessman. But most are.
He had political experience.
And businessmen get things done. That's why we were so behind Romney in 2012. Because all of a sudden there was going to be somebody in there that had a track record of getting things done.
Of the discussion coming up. But you can't run. I just think of Sergei Lavrov in Moscow, who is not a businessman. Mm-hmm. And I just think of Sergei Lavrov basically saying to, it's 8 years ago now. He basically told this Englishman, I'm not going to use that language on air, and it's like, just don't treat me, you know, like that. And he's furious. And he's not going to, I just don't know what you think of
a business approach
talking to Lavrov. It's just not going to work.
But Donald Trump is more than just a businessman. Donald Trump took on the establishment, and he beat the establishment. He beat it in the primary. He beat it in the general election. The establishment is not going to roll over. I mean, one of the most establishment agencies is the CIA. He has expressed some concern about their accuracy in a variety of areas, which I think is a viable question to ask, because the CIA is not always right. Would you agree with that?
I definitely agree
Liberals
with that.
Liberals generally agree with that.
And the head of the CIA is really a political appointment. And when he gets Pompeo in there, he's going to have his person. He's going to have a lot more confidence in the CIA because, again, his guy is going to be in there to kind of look at things and take things apart and make sure that they're doing the right thing.
And the head of
Who defines right? What is right?
Facts.
Well, what are facts?
Let me just make one statement insofar as for the last 10 days, the media and many Democrats have been deifying James Clapper, the head of intelligence.
I haven't seen go ahead.
It's been all positive. Mm-hmm, you know, absolutely. What a great guy this guy is. This is a guy who 15 months ago lied when he testified before Congress. He committed perjury. By denying, saying he had no awareness of the NSA spying on the American people, had no knowledge of it. It was a question from Ron Wyden, a Democrat, and the Democrats were very upset. Both Republicans and Democrats, 15 months ago were saying this guy should probably lose his job because he showed contempt for Congress. Now all of a sudden he's a guy that we're supposed to believe, every report that he comes out with. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. The last Sunday show of the Obama presidency, and we're coming to you live tonight from Culver City, California. Bruce Dumont back live from Culver City, California. We've got callers on the line. Let's go to Jean, line 2. She is calling from Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead, Jean. No, what was your point? He hasn't said anything to do what? Gene, let me interrupt and ask just a couple of questions. Would you acknowledge, I don't think you would acknowledge, but did you hear his speech the night that he was elected? I thought that was a very outreaching, inclusive speech. It was well reviewed because of exactly the things you referenced. He realized that more than 50% of the people did not vote for him. Thank you. What should he have done thus far? He's not president yet. What specifically should he have done that you wanted him to do? That's good. That's why we have Beyond the Beltway. Sherry Bibich Jeffy's got a comment for you.
Well, I mean, you're right. The Democrats did get it wrong, and one of the problems with Hillary Clinton's campaign was the perception was, and to some extent the reality, that she did not relate to people. She did not, and her campaign did not have their ears to the ground. And right now, the predominant perspective of many Americans is, I'm tired of people not listening, and I'm gonna talk. And that's where we are in politics. It's neither good nor bad. It has to be recognized, and it has to be worked with.
Mark.
You know, it's a little disingenuous of Jean to say that Trump isn't reaching out to people like her. She's someone who hates Trump, someone that's going to protest Trump. The reason Trump was elected is because he spoke to the average American who is sick and tired of politicians making promises and not delivering. He has been speaking to those people, and nothing Trump says is going to satisfy Jean, unfortunately.
Right. Let's go to Mark, also listening to us on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, thank you, Bruce. It's been at least 6 years since I called you, so I try not to.
Well, where the hell have you been? I mean, we've been here for 6 years. That's a lot. That's a lot under the bridge. But go ahead.
Yes, my question is: since I haven't read the 5-inch-thick stack of documents comprising the Homeland Security or the USA Patriot Acts, I'm wondering if there's a provision in there that would empower the National Guard to fire on the protesters if they got out of hand in Washington, D.C. this Friday and Saturday. The reason why I'm wondering is because on NPR, twice they've announced that at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, the general over the National Guard in D.C. is to be replaced by the Pentagon. And I guess my further question is he being replaced because he would or would not fire on the protesters?
I do not know, and let me, I think, speak for everybody who is here shaking their heads in somewhat disbelief with your suggestion. I don't think there's anyone that would suggest that is a good idea. I don't care how large the crowds get. That is a bad idea, and it completely flies in the face of what our, you know, of what everybody I think would normally be saying, that, you know, there will be, let's hope there will be protests. Let's hope that they will be have their heads together. Let's just hope that's the case. Okay? Thanks very much for your call. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Professor, I want to get your reaction. In your view, was the Trump victory legitimate?
In terms of the, in terms of the election, yes. I don't have any problem with that. Okay. I think, though, if I could comment on the Electoral College, because people have said that it should be changed. I think the Electoral College sort of had a double failure this time around, in the sense that it was originally designed in those cases where somebody was not fit for office that you could have your electors actually do this. And this goes way back in the early days of the American Republic when people were, you know, not that trusting of the masses, if you will. And then but it didn't do that. On the other hand, the other part of the failure was it prevented the person who had the majority votes from actually getting elected. Because at the end of the day, there were like 2.8 million votes in favor of Clinton. And that's why I think going ahead with the, you know, according to all the rules, it is legitimate. I have no problem with that. But there might be some cause for shifting the idea away from the Electoral College.
Let me ask this question. Why would any smaller state ever vote for a congressional amendment that would take their power away? What idiot wants to take their power away?
I think that's absolutely. Why would a smaller state do that? But I think the reality is the country is changing dramatically from like in the 19th century where you have got.
But you don't give up power. It frustrates me because we had this in the wake of Bush v. Gore. The point is, there are these, and this is not meant to be a pejorative, there's all these academic discussions about how we got to get rid of the Electoral College. There's no one comes back to the point that a small state is not going to give up their power.
Nor should they.
But I don't think you can have a system that was put in place. I don't know exactly when it was, but it's been there for more than a century. And sometimes the country is changing. And if you think of the position of California, there was a time nobody wanted to come to California. Nobody wanted to come to California. It was low population. Now California is just this giant in the economy and population.
If we got rid of the Electoral College system, you would have politicians campaigning in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, maybe one other city, and they would totally ignore the rest of the country. That is why we remain with the Electoral College system. In addition to that,
but now you have the reverse.
So why don't we get rid of the U.S. Senate? It does the same thing.
I think that's great.
No, what about people coming to California?
What about it?
Well, why should a Republican come to California other than to raise money?
Well, to raise money, exactly.
Well, that's it, and that's why Republicans come to Chicago.
Exactly.
But why is it, again, in the 21st century, why is it that the power of the country should rest in large cities? The hell with everybody else.
I'm not arguing.
Even though the election, when you look at the election results, the cities did not win this time around. In fact, it was a victory of the countryside.
Except California. But here's the reality. You're right, Bruce. It will not change. And the reason is power isn't given away. You have to grab it. And the smaller states in particular and the Republican majorities in the rural areas and the rural counties are not about to allow that to happen.
And everyone knew what the rules were.
Without question. I couldn't say the real reason, but one of the driving reasons why we have an electoral college, it wasn't, as one of my friends insists, because we knew that we had to have a mechanism by which we could elect a good man. It really wasn't simply because of the little states. It was a political compromise. It had to do with bringing on slave-holding states to the Constitution,
as well as
smaller states,
at this,
which happened to be mainly slave states.
I want to get back to what's happening right now. Are we at a point now, you know, and I said this, you know, a year ago when I predicted that Donald Trump would win, that I predicted that Donald Trump would have more problems maybe with Senate Republicans than Senate Democrats. I don't know whether that's the case, but clearly there are three Republican senators now who don't like Donald Trump.
Only three.
There's more. I think there's probably about six that don't.
I do too.
But in this particular case, those three could keep Rex Tillerson from being the next Secretary of State.
I'm talking about Rubio, I'm talking about McCain,
I'm talking about Graham, I'm talking about the also-rans, the losers, who obviously have every reason to despise Donald Trump, and they do despise, and they're getting their flesh right now.
You know, one thing we really saw when it was clear that Trump was going to be the nominee, and of course even more so when he actually won, is that you had a lot of Republican senators and a Republican, quote, establishment types that, although they weren't on board with him at first, as soon as he won, they jumped on board and almost made it seem like they were for him all along. He has tremendous support among the Senate and Congress, the Republicans in both houses. So.
But don't you think those three Republicans could stop Rex Tillerson?
They could, but I don't think they will. I think they want to make some points, but in the final analysis, they're going to go with Rex.
I'll bet you John McCain does not. Back shortly from Culver City, I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont back in Culver City, 1-800-723-8289. Obviously, for the last several months and certainly the last couple of weeks, the relationship of Donald Trump to Vladimir Putin and Russia has been front page and front and center on all the newscasts. And over the last couple of years, we've got to know Nigel Rabb from Loyola Marymount University. Russian history is one of his areas of expertise. And I want to get your reaction as to what extent do you think Russia was involved in this election, and how successful were they?
Given all the news, whether it's real or not, or we don't have the actual facts, but they definitely played a role. I just can't see them not having played a role. Did they play such a significant role that Moscow is in a position to call this election, and if things go on, maybe call the next election or something like that? No, I don't think their influence is that
significant. How many elections in the past? How often have they done this in the past?
That's a very good question. I wouldn't exactly know that answer. What I would say, though, is that in the last 4 to 8 years, Russia has become much more of a global player and therefore has been flexing its muscles. So I wouldn't be surprised, definitely not in the 90s. And I mean, I know there's that case of Khrushchev talking to Kennedy, but that was about withholding information, not active interference in elections. So,
Sherry, do you have any, based on everything that's been read and said, what do you absolutely know the Russians did in this election?
The only thing I know absolutely nothing, because I have not even seen any of the declassified reports I have purposely decided I'm not going to read the dossier, whatever little bit of the dossier, the latest dossier, has been put out there. I think we can say that there were attempts, there was hacking. Whether or not those attempts were determinative, I don't think so. I don't think we're giving the Clinton campaign enough credit for really blowing it anyway. Yeah. What I think...
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, come on, people. I don't even want to begin, okay?
But again, what we're suggesting is the leaking of information that was gleaned from the DNC.
Correct.
Whether it was leaked deliberately or through WikiLeaks, that was the negative, it was the reporting of negative comments made by the Clinton administration that made it public. That's what we're really talking about, the meddling, right?
Well,
so they were telling the American people something the American people should have known?
Well, I think they were telling the American people just how stupid the Democratic National Committee and the Clinton campaign were.
Shouldn't the American people know that?
Well,
but there I think the issue is
I don't know that
that also
makes a difference. I think what made the difference was the Comey response. And there is an argument that slowed the Clinton campaign's momentum. But part of that was the result of the way the Clinton campaign handled the aftermath.
Mark.
You know, the Russians and before them the Soviets have been trying to do whatever they can to muck up the United States electoral system for years. They haven't been successful.
And we do that to other countries.
We sure do.
We sure do. I mean, look at the millions that the Obama allies spent trying to defeat Netanyahu, one of our allies. It's an absolute crime. Absolutely. Absolutely. They had consultants in Israel paid for by people here in the United States that were associated with Obama that tried to beat Netanyahu.
Why is it?
I don't.
Because I've asked this for the last several weeks. Nobody can be specific about exactly what was done other than we know about the leaks. We know about the lack of sophistication in cybersecurity at the DNC. It was much better at the RNC. Mm-hmm. But the question is,
maybe.
That's a maybe there.
Yeah.
Because
the RNC, when the FBI informed the RNC that there was possible hacking, they cooperated with the FBI to do what they could to shore up their security. The DNC
but
ignored the FBI.
Here's my question: how has it gone from really total speculation? How has it gone from that to being a dominant point of the transition involving Donald Trump? In other words, the Democrats are still playing the Russian card far beyond its veracity.
Not only Democrats.
Obama is putting sanctions against Russia because of this hacking of the DNC rather than the hacking that the Chinese did against the government of the United States releasing, hacking into millions of records of employees of the United States of America.
What do you think of the Russian sanctions because of this, Nigel?
Well, I think in terms of what's just being said, I'm not that concerned about the exact format of exactly what was taken. It's more that Russia its position has changed dramatically in the last 4 or 5 years, and this hacking incident is not just a matter of some computer programs in Moscow. It's that Russia is taking a much more aggressive stance in the world. It is pushing its points, in fact, wherever it wants to push its points. And so taking the hacking seriously, because I don't actually question the election. I obviously ask why Democrat emails and not Republican emails. But this is what has to be taken seriously
by
anybody.
Do you not acknowledge that one of the answers might be is that the RNC took cybersecurity more serious than the Democrats?
That shouldn't be used as a reason not to take this extremely seriously, because in their news, the Russians make jokes about this. And so it's almost as if,
as well,
in a very different way, again, we can't conflate Russia with the Soviet Union. They're very, very different. And their jokes they're making in the news are like they're just poking fun
What are they saying? Tell us what the Russian press is saying.
Well, they're talking about, they've got their reporter in Washington, and the guy's making this joke that, why do I have to tell the story? You got it from the inside. from the inside, you know, whatever, your inside man and stuff like that. So that, and because Putin is, I know how we portray Putin as this KGB guy, but because he's a KGB guy or former KGB guy, the jokes, he cracks jokes himself. So it's like, it's a very weird situation.
You have read and done a lot of study of Vladimir Putin. We've talked a lot about it on this program. You know about his personality because you've studied it. You know a little bit about Donald Trump because he's been a public figure for the last, you know, 24 months at least, insofar as the intensity that he's gone under. How do you, if those two guys were in a room, how would they be getting along with each other? Is Vladimir Putin so smart, so cunning, that here that literally he could outsmart Donald Trump?
Yes. No way.
Okay. Yes.
Yes. No way. Easily.
Are we have a difference of opinion?
One of the differences is, and it's fascinating in terms of American democratic culture. Watch Putin at a press conference. Maybe Trump will learn, but Putin is very receptive to questions.
Yeah.
Very receptive to debating with somebody, and his press conferences are not that of a tyrant who is just basically telling whoever the reporters were, I forget their name, you know, you're lying, I'm not accepting a question from you, and moving on. Putin is much more diplomatic.
He's shrewd.
He's shrewd,
but so is Donald Trump. I mean, in the negotiations Donald Trump has done in the past, in his world, you know, he's seemingly friends with somebody, which brings their guard down. He has a nice negotiation. But Donald Trump
does what's best for his country. Yes, if Moscow needs a skyscraper, Trump is, yes, the guy to call. But if Moscow has a problem with Iran that needs some type of dealing with Washington, I think you want Putin there.
Based on what Putin did in the Ukraine and the sanctions that were imposed then, what impact have those sanctions had on Putin and Russia?
In terms of his political standing, to date, the sanctions have had, I would say, his popularity ratings, no impact. They did for a while because there was this dip in the economy. And another thing, the Russians and Putin included, make no bones about it, they don't want the sanctions. They want the sanctions removed, and the sanctions hurt them.
Right.
They're open about this. And Putin will say, it's like, I just don't understand, you know, why my friend has this sanction on him. But what's happened in the last 2 years, with Russia emerging, Russia's military is now back to something that Russians can be proud of.
And why is that,
Nigel? In a way,
it
wasn't.
Why is that? I mean, there's a commonality here. You said in the past 6 to 8 years, Russia has gotten a lot stronger, yeah. And they have. And it's because Obama has weakened our country. The rest of the world has no respect for our military, for our standing in the world. And that's why the Russians think they can get away with anything, and they have in the Crimea, in Ukraine. I mean, they have been able to.
It's never black.
They are now
in the Middle East, which they haven't been since the 70s. It's an environment.
Wait a minute. Wait. Do you believe, Sherry, do you think things that the United States in world affairs is better today than it was 6 years ago?
Better.
Less fighting, less conflict with the United States. Where has the Obama foreign policy, where has it left us with 5 days to go? Are we better off or worse off in many regions of the world?
Yes.
Many. Okay.
Either one. You can't just write a blank check, good. Or a blank check, bad, you guys. Come on.
Well, you can.
Why not?
Yeah.
Because you want to learn about it. Because you want to study it, as Nigel does. You want to look at the guy. You know, I looked into his eyes and saw his soul. That's only a part of it,
Sherry, when you draw a red line and you don't...
That was a mistake. Okay. I agree with you.
It was also a mistake
for the president to say, oh, sure, you can keep your own doctor. But that's not what we're talking about here.
Why not? It's the last Sunday of the Obama presidency.
Well, fine, but those are two mistakes.
In almost all areas of the world, we are weaker. You have in the South China Sea, the Chinese building an island and setting up a military base. You have now Russia, friends with Turkey.
But China is 1.4 billion people. No wonder they're going
to
flex their muscle.
And that's okay for them set up in a section of the sea and say it's theirs now?
1-800-723-8289. Good lively discussion the last Sunday night of the Obama presidency. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont in Culver City, California. Bruce Dumont back in Culver City, California. Sherry, you were going to make a point before the break.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot
make
about...
Make it into the microphone.
Thank you, sir.
So the folks on the radio land can hear you.
I'm so relaxed, I keep forgetting there's a microphone there.
We should tell everybody, it's a very relaxed, it's a new studio, so go ahead.
Yeah, and we're throwing things at one another, and you do have to bob and weave now and then. But what I was saying previously was, you know, we're arguing about how much more involved Russia is, how much stronger Russia is. And I want to make the point that the one thing we haven't considered is the reality that this is the first presidential election where social media has had a significant impact, period, with or without Russia. The tools are there. Russia took advantage of them. That's something we really haven't looked at.
And so did Donald Trump.
And so did Donald Trump.
As he does
and
every
Hillary,
day.
And Hillary, just as she did in 2008, didn't get it right fast enough, if at all.
Right.
And the Chinese have reprimanded the president-elect for being Mr. Social Media.
Which, you know, I think it's a great thing because the press is being cut out as the middleman for delivering the message that the president is saying to the people. But this way, it's directly to the people. I like knowing what he's thinking, when he's thinking it, and having that immediacy.
But you don't need to cut out the press to have a tweet. I mean, you're saying that let's replace press with tweets.
No, I'm not saying press didn't like it.
I worry about the press in the United States after all these – all these attacks on journalists, like verbal attacks on journalists. So I would see keep the press going, and yes, you can have direct information from the tweet.
That's been going on for a long time.
Nigel, let me ask you this question. What lesson should the mainstream media learn from this campaign? Because I have seen nothing since Election Day. They've learned anything. They want to change anything. They are insular in their discussions. They're overly defensive, and they have no idea what the people out in TV land really think about them. Because there's a reason why there's a lack of respect for them, because some of them, many of them, high visibility members of the media, have acted in a totally irresponsible, biased way. Nobody respects them as journalists because they're polemic. And they deliver polemics. Not reporting.
Mm-hmm. On both sides.
But I'm wondering, is the answer to go back to a Walter Cronkite-style evening news?
No.
Which is more staid and
no.
more, you
Why
know,
not?
Less of a show? Or is there just going to be sort of 50 different channels that you get your news from and just don't believe it?
There has to be a better, higher standard. And I'm going to name a name. There has to be more Tim Russerts. When Tim Russert was the host of Meet the Press, he would be tough on everyone, but I think everyone would agree he was fair. That's not the case with Chuck Todd. Chuck Todd is a partisan Democrat.
He's talking with
John Lewis today about, well, why don't you try impeachment? I mean, this guy is way, way beyond the pale of an objective journalist. He's slightly less offensive than maybe others, but I mean this is a major television network that learned nothing from what happened. Lester Holt this week is going to go on the road to find out what Americans feel on the way to the Trump nomination. Where were they for the last 18 months?
Yeah, there really has to be a delineation between people delivering the news and delivering editorial, and there doesn't seem to be any longer. You know, even on Fox News, you have people that are delivering the news, and then you have people like Sean Hannity that are, of course, on the right, and just like on MSNBC.
Way overboard, by the way.
Yeah.
Way overboard.
And then on MSNBC, you have the opposite effect. But where are the people that are just delivering the news and are being nonpartisan? We've almost lost that.
I would like to see it go in the other direction. I'd like to see a European style where you know – that's why I don't watch Fox News, but it's like at least I know. You know, it's like it has a perspective. I know the perspective. And then maybe you watch MSNBC. It has its perspective that we know that perspective. And so that when we meet in a room, we understand there are political differences.
I agree.
No problem.
I totally agree with that. Where I don't agree with it is when you take the most venerable – news interview show in the history of television, the longest running television show, and you put into that chair, frankly, a political hack who only sees things one way. And he's about
his That's as much a decision of management, though.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's all about TV as business, and it's all about what happened when David Gregory didn't get immediately the ratings that
and
the
neither
people
Chuck,
in
and
charge
neither is Chuck Todd.
Wanted to get. So who's next?
But yeah, the president.
We got to go to calls. Let's go to Dan in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening to us on 98.3 Knoxville, Tennessee, line one. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I just want to call in, long-time listener.
Yes.
One of your people on the panel made a comment about getting rid of the Electoral College.
Yes.
And I think that really pertains quite a bit to the issue of the rule of law and what this country was founded on. I think we've reached a point to where, people don't realize, whether because they're not well-educated or well-read, is the fact that, this is not mob rule. In this country, it was based on a constitutional republic, and for some reason, because this time the Republicans won, and the Democrats have had power for 8 years, that now all of a sudden they want to change the rules. And when I say when it comes to rule of law, is in that if people don't like the way this country was founded and the way it operates, I mean it's the greatest civilization in the history of mankind. You could probably argue then maybe they should move to Europe. Because I've been to Europe, I've been to Africa, I'm a former veteran intelligence officer, served in the first Gulf-Iraq War. I was born near Chicago in Hammond, Indiana. I lived in Los Angeles, I lived in New York, and I moved to Tennessee for various reasons, but mostly so that my Second Amendment rights were protected and all my constitutional rights were protected.
Dan, I've got to ask you a quick question based on what you've just identified. I need 30-second answer.
Sure.
As a former military intelligence officer, how do you feel about the apparent brouhaha, the disagreement between the president and the agencies of intelligence in the country? Are you worried about it?
No. I mean, honestly, Bruce, people are political animals. There's politics, in your local school board. I don't foresee a problem. I mean, the reality is...
Dan, we got to go. Thanks for joining us. Back shortly from Culver City. Bruce Dumont back in Culver City, 1-800-723-8029, wherever you're listening from coast to coast and border to border. Nice to have you with us. BeyondTheBeltway.com, that's the website. You can hear this program. And also, we should mention that generally, we are also a television show every Sunday night when we are at our home base in Chicago. However, tonight in Chicago, if you're listening on WIND or WCGO, there will be a separate show that will be on tonight that will be the television show, so you'll be able to hear us both on radio and TV with two separate shows. Anyway, 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. We are live from Westwood One in Culver City, California this evening. And one of the big stories over the last 48 hours has been civil rights icon, member of Congress for many years, John Lewis, making a comment that he thinks that Donald Trump is an illegitimate president. He's not going to show up at the inauguration. There's about 22 other Democrats that are going to turn their backs and not attend that inauguration and show some disrespect for the President of the United States. Sherry, your reaction to what John Lewis said and how Donald Trump responded.
Well, first of all, as I mentioned, I'm not going to put a value judgment on what Representative Lewis said or didn't say. He indicated that he thought that Donald Trump's presidency was illegitimate. I understand to some extent where that is coming from. It has something to do with the politics of his home district, and he represents a small district, a Democratic district, a constituency that is very skeptical of Donald Trump. Donald Trump.
Can I just comment on that? The other part of that is he used the word that he didn't think Donald Trump was legitimate, and then in the next breath he made reference to Donald Trump, who was a major player in the birther movement.
Well, that's...
So basically this is get even time.
Wait.
This is about getting even.
But can I make the point that right now Donald Trump is moving in to the office of President of the United States. He himself said, I'm not going to be a divider. I'm going to be a uniter. He represents not politically. He needs to reach out and represent all of America. I understand the politics of what's going on, but he did not behave anywhere near in a presidential manner. And in fact, the statements he made about Representative Lewis's district
were wrong,
factually incorrect.
Mark, your reaction.
I will make a value judgment on what Representative Lewis said. I think that was a horrible thing that he said. If he and the people of his district don't agree with what he thinks Trump is going to do, he should say, I'm going to work with the president to try to push through our agenda and to stop the things that
he
are going to hurt my district.
He said that quite frankly. Did you see the whole thing? Because he said, yes, I can
but
work. I will work for him on issues.
And he's
going to
turn his back.
Us.
There's no excuse for that. He is a civil rights icon. He's a representative in Congress. He should know how the system works, and he does. So
he
to
does.
Say that is awful. And by the way, when he attacks Donald Trump is tweeting back, not just in defense of himself, but in defense of all the people that support and voted for Donald Trump. So he's basically the champion of the people that voted for him.
That is as divisive as anything he has done. And only
Lewis deserved it.
Huh?
Lewis deserved it.
He deserved it from your perspective.
Yes.
I'm not going to make a value judgment on that, but I do think it is quite ironic that Trump reacted and Trump supporters reacted so virulently.
In my opinion, Donald Trump acted in an unpresidential way.
And
like at the press conference.
He has challenged the legitimacy of the presidency of
Obama. He wasn't in Congress when he did that. He wasn't in Congress.
But he wasn't in president-elect.
He was just a citizen.
Oh, come on. You are making stupid
What I'm saying is I think that in this particular case, John Lewis did not do anything to help his own credential by what he did.
He did within the Democratic Party.
When you put a microphone in front of John Lewis, it's a national story. And mm-hmm. so those that put a microphone in front of him, they want to sow discontent between the president-elect of the United States and African-Americans all over the country. That's what they want.
Well, what did Trump want to do when he did the same to Barack Obama?
I told you that was not... First of all, I don't think it's apples. It's not apples and apples. It's apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm. I think it's apples and worse is what I think.
You know why? Here's why I think it's different. When Donald Trump said that, he was a reality talk show host, and he was a billionaire businessman. That's who he was. He had no credential as a civil rights icon. John Lewis does. John Lewis should be respected for what he has done in the past.
And he still should.
He should not be respected for what he did 48 hours ago, in my opinion. And here's why.
Because the point is, the result of that is
he wants to drive a wedge between Donald Trump, the president, who spoke more about
No. Listen. Well, I don't know what he did. That's probably one
Donald
of the
Trump,
you know, that's
Sherry,
probably
Sherry,
one
Sherry,
of the
one
political
second.
Reasons, but only one.
Donald Trump has spoke more about aspirations of African Americans and improving their lives in this campaign than all other Republicans running in the last maybe 50 years. And you know what? It scares the hell out of the Democratic Party that there was a Republican out there who got more black votes than anybody thought he was going to get. And those Democrats, because the turnout for Hillary Clinton was not sufficient enough to push a Democrat into the White House, and the Democrats are scared out of their wits because Donald Trump could make some inroads with black votes. So they send out a living icon, and his job is to absolutely drive a stake through the heart. On the same day he did that, Donald Trump is meeting with Steve Harvey, yes, a comedian, yes, a talk show host, but I will tell you, in contemporary America, far more relevant than John Lewis, as someone who speaks for African Americans who live in America's city, wants to do something about it.
As an academic, I want to see the data that proves that. And I'm not arguing that it's true, and I'm not arguing that
Steve Harvey is more popular than John Lewis?
And where and for whom? This is all being painted with such a broad brush. And that's a part of the reason we are where we are now. So divided. There is a gray area. You can be X one day and Y one day. If you've got the data, if you've got the facts to support it. But nobody gives an inch. And I almost used a terrible F word.
That would be frustrated.
It was.
You know, the average person.
I'm going to get Nigel in.
I just wanted, happily listening here, I just wanted to comment on the idea that Trump tweets in representing the people who voted for him. Because I don't think I've ever seen anybody who has such a thin skin, who takes everything so personally and is so reminiscent of like a French king from like the 1600s or something like that.
If you hit Trump, he's going to hit back
and his
harder.
Court. And so
he's done that from the beginning.
That's right.
And the other one in that is why does I try to imagine all these childish tweets to Americans, but what happens when it becomes a foreign leader that gets this tweet, and there's going to be this diplomatic crisis in Beijing or something like that.
By the way, you talk about childish tweets, and I have said that Donald Trump shouldn't tweet as much, and many of his tweets are childish. I totally agree with that. I've said that for the last 18 months, okay? But in my view, it's also childish to say, you know what? We're not going to support him because he didn't support Barack Obama. That's a little schoolyard childish.
Who's saying that?
John Lewis. John Lewis said it today. John Lewis said that the reason that he
did not say that.
Yes, he did.
He said it
because they picked on Barack Obama over the birth certificate.
He's hurt his reputation, John Lewis.
Back shortly in Culver City. Bruce Dumont, we're on radio, we're on Sirius XM satellite radio, we're on the internet, we're on Vimeo, we're on YouTube, we're live streaming at beyondthebeltway.com. Here's somebody listening to us on the stream tonight. Where are you calling from, Brian? Or where are you watching the stream?
Hello, this is Brian.
Yeah, where do you live?
I live in Roselle. I call you often.
Roselle, Roselle, Illinois. Okay, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, well, I couldn't listen to the show up to date, but the comments I wanted to make were you guys were harping on the media earlier, and I have an axe to grind with the media. Smart people don't listen to what people say. They report and look at what people do. Why don't the media get off their lazy butts and the owners of the media spend the money to go out and report on real stories on their own instead of just reporting on what Donald Trump said that day? They waste so much time commenting on the latest tweet of Donald Trump, like it's the most shocking thing in the world. You know, meanwhile, North Korea is developing ICBMs and miniaturizing nuclear weapons and all these other important things are going on. But what do we hear about? Donald Trump's tweet. See, the problem is the media. You know, Donald Trump's going to act like an adolescent jerk. That's who he is. So why doesn't the media act like grown-ups and just ignore him or just give him 30 seconds at the top of the news and then talk about what's really going on in the world instead of, it's like junior high. It's like I feel like I'm back in eighth grade.
You know. Another thing they could do. This is your point. I think is well taken. I think it's a good idea. The other thing they could do is they could explore various solutions to problems. Some of those might be left of center. Some of those might be right of center. But literally, you take a problem that the country has, and you have a discussion, and you present like a documentary or a series of reports on news. Donald Trump has said that he gets a lot of his news from obviously watching the news. Gets a lot of ideas from watching the talk shows. So I mean, if the CBS Evening News did a 7-minute rollout on one night talking about how we're going to deal with criminal justice reform issue,
won't happen.
Now, what I'm saying is Donald Trump may get the idea by watching that show. He's not going to get it by reading a book about it. We know that.
Yeah, but I mean,
but he may watch it on TV.
Bruce, it's all about eyeballs when you're talking about television anyway. Why did they pay attention to Trump? Because Trump brings ratings. Why does the media sweat that they're going to be kicked out of the White House? They're not going to be called upon on a press conference because that will deny them access to this new president. It's all about that.
To Paula's point, I mean, the media is at one of its lowest points in popularity among the American people. They are sick and tired of the way the media is operating.
Yeah, but they're getting the ratings. They don't care about...
We are about to usher in
the most unpopular president-elect, but he's president-elect. The media is unpopular, but man, since Trump's election, the subscriptions to the New York Times and the Washington Post have gone way up. MSNBC has gone up in the ratings. CNN has gone up in the ratings. Fox still has a rating on the rating that is twice as high as MSNBC and CNN combined, but it's closer. You're not going to give up looking at Donald Trump. The message from the audience is, we like to watch this.
That's right.
It means and ratings. It means ads. It means eyeballs. It means money.
And that's why there were so many of so many Republican debates leading up to the leading up to the final contest, and they were timed perfectly to make sure that debates were always on your mind, even though they were not really debates; they were shows and stuff like that. So, and the other one is the comment about the press wanting access. I mean, this is a scary moment when we can openly talk about the fact that you might be cut out from the discussion, and then you think, well, I've gone through that one. I know that one from the Soviet Union. You know, it's like
but
a very scary moment.
But in the news business, obviously, CNN at the moment is trying to get they're trying to get back on track with the administration because they need their access.
Bingo.
The access has been cut because CNN ran with a report that Donald Trump was offended by because it was not based on fact.
They did not report the details of the dossier, the stuff that they have on the president-elect, as BuzzFeed did. What CNN
did was simply report that there was a report. And that reporter, that CNN reporter in that press conference was so disrespectful. You never would have seen that in a press conference of President Obama.
But he was as disrespectful as the Congressman Jim Wilson, who yelled at the State of the Union address
terrible.
To Barack Obama, you lie.
That wasn't good, but that's
terrible.
A whole different thing.
Let's
that was,
not
he
make
wasn't
excuses
pressed.
For
he wasn't
that
pressed.
Bullshit.
And there's no excuse for that either.
I'll watch your language.
Sorry. Bleep.
But the president-elect at that press conference acted in such a way that there was only one response from the CNN reporter. He had to yell back because
yes, he did.
It was a dictatorial press conference.
It was.
And you do
have
that President Obama cut Fox News out for a while.
A president of the United States or any politician, they can choose who they're going to call on.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And in this particular case, we saw in a very visible way, we saw CNN get their hands slapped because they raised the possibility of the president-elect of the United States being blackmailed because of professional and personal information, and one's mind can wonder what that's about. BuzzFeed took it further than CNN, but again, you cannot accept...
Way further.
Right, and I think irresponsibly.
Right.
And it was reported in the New York Times and the Washington Post, two of the nation's most respected newspapers.
It was fake news. It was fake news.
You think
and
it was fake news?
No, it wasn't fake news.
It
and
was
I think
news.
You
it
just
was
can't.
Not
do you think,
it was not
we
do,
don't want
to. Do you think BuzzFeed was fake news?
That, I think, was just journalistically bad for them to do. I don't think we can use fake news. We shouldn't use the expression fake news whenever a point comes up that one doesn't disagree with, that one just dismisses it by calling it fake news.
I agree.
Because at stake there is the fact that it's a new form of censorship. It's not like a censorship.
You're absolutely right.
Of an older
and
style.
It's the left that's been using this term fake news a lot more.
No, it was you who used the term fake news. You're the only one here who used the term fake news.
Here's the point. You have a situation where you had a news organization report that there was this report that was out there that the intelligence people were going to brief Donald Trump or had briefed Donald Trump and had briefed President Obama on this report. They didn't get into the salacious aspect of it. BuzzFeed did. BuzzFeed has been criticized by a lot of journalists. But I'll tell you what we saw last night, and this happened. You saw SNL last night. The opening monologue last night, the skit, was all about the golden shower. It was all about the most salacious part of this report that no one knows if it's true or not. No one knows if it's true.
It's satire.
Let me finish. Already, the imprint of that salacious report that no one knows is true. Let me just finish my point. I'm going to predict something. It is already taking on a life. It's going to take on the exact same life that the rumors about J. Edgar Hoover took on. That started with an unsubstantiated report picked up by the left, picked up by media, picked up by the comedians of the world, and it's in the body politic of what the personal life of J. Edgar Hoover was about. There's no one that can tell you factually that that story is true. And there's no one, I would say, there's no one that can tell you that the BuzzFeed story and the video that allegedly exists, which was shown on Saturday Night Live last night as a joke, no one can tell you why that video exists. And you know why I don't believe it exists? Because if it existed, it would have been on the internet by now. It would be all over the internet. That's why I don't believe. Well, and by the way, someday, if it shows up on the internet, I will come on and acknowledge that. But you know what? The fact that it's not on the internet means to me that's not a true story.
Not every video that the Soviet secret, or the, sorry, the Russian Federation Secret Service does gets on the, you know, gets on the internet. They actually
have
pretty.
If they want to put it on, it gets on.
If they want to put it on, it gets on.
Do you think, is it being held?
That I'm ready. The first thing I'd like to say about Saturday Night Live, that's a comedy show. And you know, I think what? We have to differentiate between a comedy show, and I think this is the problem, a comedy show and a news show, but I think we don't.
The problem is a lot of people see Saturday Night Live and they think that is fact, and that's the only time
well,
they see it.
Yes,
let's remember.
And that's a problem.
Let me ask you, okay, it's comedy and it's satire.
And it's a special audience that already believes what they do. I mean, you know, this is a group of people who aren't going to be convinced, oh, my God, it's terrible. Because they are – Saturday Night Live is playing to an audience.
All right, now I'm going to make my next point. I agree with you because you led me right into where I wanted to go.
Of course.
Because you know what that is? It's looking at the media, because the media as an entity, the collective mainstream media, they have already decided that their audience, the Trump audience is watching Fox News.
Right.
The rest of America, the popular vote America, which is the one they care about, because it's the big city people, they're a little younger, they're a little hipper, they're more demographically correct, minority.
They spend more.
They spend more money, that's right. It could be the gay community. Whatever it is, the popular vote demographics of America, that's what the networks want. And so, whether it's Meryl Streep getting up and singing to the choir at the Golden Globes, or Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel or Saturday Night Live saying all the things that they want to say, the people out in Trump land are either turning it off or they're throwing up to it. But you know what? The majoritarian voters, the popular voters, they love it. And that's where we're going to get more of it, even though it may be disrespectful of the president and overall hurtful to the country in the long run. Because you know what?
It's ratings.
It's about the bucks. You're right. It's about the bucks.
And that's again, something to worry about in terms of American democracy.
Well, a lot of the people that are watching
aren't
watching the news. They're watching Saturday Night Live. They never even watch the news, and that's where a lot of them get their information,
unfortunately. I want to come back and talk just about what it does to society. And I'm going to share a story. Back shortly. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8229. We've got Knoxville on the line. We will hear from them when we roll on from Culver City, California, Westwood One Radio. Robert in Knoxville, Tennessee, you're on Beyond the Beltway. Go ahead, please. Hello, Robert.
Yes.
Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I guess. Well, simple comment. Just wanted to say, as far as the outcry, the media and Hollywood, and it's the same usual characters. And as far as the things you're saying, mm-hmm. Prejudice, racism, hatred, whatever, is all the same. It's kind of a broken record, and they're just playing the same broken record. And at this point, I mean, we don't know there's anything valid. I'm not saying that Donald Trump is necessarily valid, but certainly the liberal media and all of their, like I said, invalid claims mm-hmm. are it's just their own cynicism as much as anything, and their lack of respect for other people.
Well, also, we talked in the last segment, we talked about sort of, you know, the message going to one demographic group, and that's the group they're talking to. And again, Meryl Streep's comments at the Golden Globes last Sunday night, she was speaking, she was speaking to the choir that night. But someone who is a Republican in Hollywood, used to be the chairman of the Los Angeles Republican Party, and now you're the regional vice chair of the California GOP, Mark Viviati's one of our guests. Mark, what was the reaction the next day to Meryl Streep amongst the people that you work with and live with in California and Hollywood?
Utter disgust. I mean, you know, Meryl Streep is a fantastic actress. She's one of the best. And when they have to make their selves political, and they use the stage that they should be using to, you know, discuss their profession, their craft, and they use it for political purposes, people are sick and tired of that. Not only in Hollywood, not only the conservatives in Hollywood, but again, people in middle America. This hurts her. It hurts again the reputation of Hollywood even more. It exacerbates what people think about how bad Hollywood is and how one-sided they are.
Let me ask you, how do the people in Hollywood that you know, I don't know whether you probably have a few liberal friends amongst your friends. Mm-hmm. First of all, just in your daily life, how much have you been hurt personally or professionally because you're a Republican in this bastion of liberal anti-Trump California?
Yeah, well, actually, I am in the entertainment industry as well, and it has hurt because if you Google me, if I was going up for some kind of a part and the casting director Googled me, they're going to see all of that. And most of the people in positions of power in Hollywood, such as casting directors and producers, for the most part, are on the left. And if it's between two people and one of them leans in one direction and one leans in the other, well, you know which way they're going to go. So it definitely, and there are so many people that whose careers have been hurt by this.
Cynical.
No, it's absolutely true.
can I make a point?
Go ahead, and then we're going to go to Sherry. You know, go ahead, okay. Robert.
You know, Hollywood has a tendency to, you know, paint themselves as the safeguards of society. But when you look at the actual content of a lot of their movies, like Opie the Puce, where they kind of, you know, they take it very casually and almost promote it. And Meryl Streep as well could pick out any one of a million other injustices in other areas of the world and hit on a far greater injustice as well. It's political motivation. It's targeted at the wrong person. Let the man's policies at least, you know, if he fails, I'm not saying, you know, he won't. But, you know, at least he's been kind of summarily trashed. Yeah.
I think the same way about the media. I don't think Hollywood has gotten the message how many people out in movie land in middle America could care less about what their politics are. So I guess to some extent the media says, well, there's some importance when a Hollywood, you know, person or stars all get together to support always a left-wing cause. But the reality is it doesn't have much impact.
It didn't have much impact. In this campaign.
Well, obviously, it helped him in California. It helped him in New York. It helped him in the arts communities around the country. But it didn't help him in Omaha.
Bruce, can I bring in a Russian example this one? Because when you talk about people outside of Hollywood in the central areas of the country who don't care a hoot about the Hollywood politics, but it's like Russians who watch American films from Hollywood. They have no problem watching an American film, a Hollywood production, loving it, admiring it. And yet at the same time, they don't like the United States and they don't really care anything about Hollywood politics.
Can I make this point? Yeah. Hollywood is not a monolith. The creative community is, by and large, liberal, Democrat, maybe independent there. The business community, management, the people who fund the films, who do the green lights, all of that, they're investors. They go where the power is, and they invest in that power. They're far less ideological than the creative community. And then there are the crafts. And the crafts are people who work in Hollywood for a living. It's the town they live in. They aren't liberal. They are certainly not investors. They can be moderate, liberal. They can be conservative.
They're union members.
They're union members, yes, but it's, you know, it's not public employees.
But they're blue collar. They're blue collar.
They are, thank you.
So conceivably, they could be Trump people.
Many of them are.
That's exactly right.
Many of them are quietly.
That's exactly right.
They're closeted.
They are closeted. And the front-facing part of Hollywood, the people that are the stars before the cameras, they pretty much are a monolith. If anybody else got up at the Golden Globes and gave an opposing view, say a conservative message, a pro-Trump message, what do you think would have happened to that person?
Well, but that was the creative community by and large. It is that constituency.
But it's also the people with green light that are also leaning left.
They would get up anyway.
Are you concerned, though, that a number of alleged big stars, or allegedly some big stars, have refused to entertain the president. Does that bother anybody?
What bothers me is that all around and on every level and with regard to every constituency, there is pressure on people, and people respond to that pressure because they don't want to lose fans, because they don't want to lose a job, because they don't want to lose a paycheck. And we are talking about the office of the president.
You know, to answer that question, Bruce, it doesn't bother me. If somebody doesn't agree with Donald Trump, it doesn't bother me if they don't want to perform at the inauguration, for example. But what does bother me is if there is someone that agrees with Trump and they want to perform and their career is going to be hurt or they're going to be ridiculed because of that, that's what bothers me.
If that happens, and we just don't know.
So Lee,
we don't know yet. It hasn't happened yet.
So you think Lee Greenwood has a future?
Oh, boy.
he's pretty probably okay. But there are some Hollywood
types. I was just going to think they were going to be all country stars.
There are some Hollywood types that were at the convention in Cleveland
and
this
what
summer,
about the
and
Dixie
they were
chicks?
Ridiculed.
You know, they were negative, shall we say, about George W. Bush for quite some time
and
within the country community.
And it was
they were pariahs. They're working their way back. I mean, it happens. You know, stop this.
Not
it
as much.
Happens.
Oh, no.
Look,
it's not
you know
even.
What we haven't done.
Are we? Let me ask you the question. Are we? This gets back to where we began this conversation.
Good.
Do you think that we are on the verge of not a shooting civil war?
Oh, God.
But are we on the verge of a civil war of civility, of common sense?
Not on the verge. We're there.
You referenced Nigel. You know, comedy and Saturday Night Live, and I would describe to some extent the debasing of the presidency. And I would acknowledge there are some things that Donald Trump said and did that also have debased the presidency, even though he's not there yet. I acknowledge that he's not a Boy Scout, but what is the short term and long term impact on the country?
Well, I think that when you look at sort of the county-by-county maps of how people elected, that there is a divide between urban areas and what's going on. Because even in places like Ohio, Toledo, I guess, is blue, and the rest of the state is red. And so this is a big, big demographic shift. I worry, because we always talk about echo chambers, that people now with the internet, and I think the internet's being completely discredited, with the internet you just listen to your own community and you get your news not even from Saturday Night Live, you get it from your little, you know, group of fishermen or your group of bowlers or whoever that group is.
BuzzFeed.
And you spread it
or
around.
Facebook.
And I worry about I also worry about in terms of these echo chambers that there will be like brain drain from the Midwest into the coastal areas, because that is a big trend. The big international American universities are never far from a coast, and so I worry about that.
I'm not as concerned. Things have been, in the past, in our history, things have been very, very divisive. This is not something.
And there was a civil war.
The election of 1800 was horrible.
But there wasn't Facebook. Facebook can turn friend against friend over politics. We know in the last 18 months, the vitriol that we see.
That we didn't want to be friends with them anyway.
This is the point I want to make, and you have made it in your own way.
Thank you.
You know, we've talked a lot about everything, but what is the citizen's role? What is the citizen's responsibility? You talk about Facebook. Who's on Facebook? All of our so-called friends and ourselves. And we're being mean, and we're circulating fake news. I believe that we cannot blame every single institution in this society without looking at how we as voters, as citizens, have shunned our responsibility in a democracy, even a representative democracy.
I agree with that. And I think with the Facebook, I think part of it, it's such a passive, private phenomenon that you really, instead of Facebooking, you should be in the community center. You should be
that's
in the town hall.
President
you should be bowling and, or not bowling alone.
It's easy to be mean in a post. It's easy
that's
to
right.
be mean in a tweet.
Point
just
taken.
Like we talked about with Donald Trump. Somebody picks on him, he's going to fight back. He does not sit there and take it. You hit Donald Trump, you're going to be hit back twice. And by the way, that's not going to change. The question is he going to do it in a tweet to the wrong guy? Back shortly from Culver City. Bruce Dumont back in Culver City. And this is our last segment, so I want to take a moment to further introduce the guest that you've been listening to, hopefully for the last couple of hours. Nigel Rabb is here. He is a professor of history at Loyola Marymount University, author of a couple of books called All Shook Up, The Shifting Soviet Response to Catastrophes, from 1917 to 1991, and also author of the book, Who is the Historian? Give us a little bracket. What is Who is the Historian about?
Who is the Historian is an accessible book to give give students and readers a sort of a sense of what the historian does, because sometimes you think of historians as just people who just sit in dusty archives and read books, and yet it actually shows you that not only is being a historian exciting and offers you all sorts of international opportunities, but it also provides a very good background for getting jobs in all sorts of different fields.
Good. And by the way, this is, I think, you're coming into your third year of being on this program, so you were a great find when we started to do this show from a couple of years out here, so it's nice to have you back with us this evening. Sherry Bibich-Jeffy, she is the political analyst for NBC4 in Los Angeles, a veteran professor at USC, and we've known each other for about 25 years
now. Right, since we were in the cradle, Bruce.
A guest on this program many times, and one of our new friends out in Los Angeles, Mark Viviades, who used to head the Los Angeles County Republican Party. He's now the regional vice chair of the California GOP. And again, they've been our guests this evening, and we appreciate the help that they've given us. And by the way, before we run out of time at the end of the show, I just want to thank Art Martinez and Miriam Gonzalez and Kurt Hemming and Anthony Vitello and C.K. Bauer and Dennis Green, all of Westwood One, who helped make things go well here in Culver City this evening, and Chris Wick, our engineer back in Chicago. So thank you all. Let's go to Rick listening to us in South Bend, Indiana. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Rick.
Yes.
I'm glad that Obama is leaving, because I felt like over the years he didn't represent my beliefs. However, with that said, I don't want us, those who voted for him, to treat the Democrats the way he treated us.
Say that. Elaborate on that, if you will.
Well, for instance, his he didn't believe in giving us religious freedom. I'm against abortion, and he forced us as a taxpayer to use our money for issues like that and ignored our religious beliefs.
Okay. Thanks for your call. We only have about 5 minutes left. I want to give everybody just a minute to give us your assessment, objective, if you will, on the Obama presidency. Nigel, let's start with you.
I think in terms of domestically, we'll have the same debate in 4 years, but remembering the Bush years, the economic crisis in the late aughts and the Iraq war and all the reasons that, you know, that the administration gave that never turned out to be true, I thought for Obama, part of his job was to stabilize the country, to stabilize the economy. And I thought he did a very good job with that. In terms of foreign policy, I mean, very, very difficult. Again, we've discussed Russia was rising, and so with a stronger Russia, yes, you had to be stronger back. But given what happened with the Iraq war and all the things that went wrong, it was very, very difficult for a strong foreign policy.
Sherry Bibich-Jeffy.
Well, I think if you put it all on the scale one way or another, I think that in general he was a good president. Whether or not he's judged to be not so good or great will depend a lot on the historians who write the definitive valuation of the Obama presidency. I agree with Nigel that particularly on the economic front, he did very well. I was very happy with his choice of Joe Biden as vice president. I think it took a lot of self-confidence, if you will, to have Biden as his wingman. And Biden's been around, and Obama knew he didn't know as much as Biden did. So I'd give him an A-.
Well, you may not be surprised that I totally disagree. Domestically, he did a horrible job. We had the slowest recovery since World War II. He's the first president in history that hasn't had a 3% growth rate in his entire presidency. The labor participation rate, which is the true indication of how many people are working, is the lowest since 1978. The way they measure unemployment now is not real. And to say that we have a low unemployment rate is not true. Again, the labor participation rate is high. National security.
Well, that depends on who's doing the study.
Well, this is from the government. You know, this is from the government's website.
To come back to where we started at the beginning of the program, and that is just the level of intensity that's in the country. A quick story: when I was a young man, and John F. Kennedy was assassinated, I remember reading occasional stories in the paper, very small stories, about when that assassination was announced. There were some people who were cheering in their classrooms. It wasn't on television. It was a very small article. What I worry about now, and frankly I've worried about for the last 8 years, I think we're in a situation because of the hatred that many people have for the President of the United States, whether it's this one or the one that's going to raise his hand on Friday. I fear for a country where I think if the horrible thing happened again, I think that maybe 50% of the American people would be cheering, not crying, not sympathizing for the country, not respecting the 50 million plus people that voted for the person. That's what I worry about. We've had a spirited but civil discussion here this evening. I can tell you, we've had different people that voted different ways. That's generally what we have on this program. But it frightens me as an American, because we do have to move forward. There was an election. Somebody won, somebody lost. And again, in my view, the president is legitimate. And by the way, in the history of this program, if you've been listening to it for 37 years, you know that for the last 8 years, I never spent 1 second talking about Barack Obama's birth certificate. It wasn't important. I knew Barack Obama. First time I voted for Barack Obama. He used to be on this program occasionally. He is a good and decent man. I thought he brought an element of respect with his wife, Michelle, and a great father, a great husband, and I think a man that should be respected and will be respected by history for what he did. Now, the new guy coming in, different style. But the American people selected that style. And so I say goodnight this evening, our thanks to our guests. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Culver City, California.